Welcome to New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Common Good Capital. I'm here today with Mike West. Mike and I think we met in my prior career. So that would have, believe it or not, I don't think you and I ever really ever talked. That had to have been 10, 12 years ago now.
I think that's right. Yeah, I think I recall meeting you in Orlando, and it feels like 10 or 12 years is about right.
Yeah. Mike has had an interesting career, and we're going to learn more about it. Today, Mike is the executive chairman and chairman of the board at Lirio, which I'm sure he'll talk about a little bit. I'm not even going to try to explain it because I'll botch it up. Full transparency, just I am an investor in Lirio. I've been an investor in Lirio for many years. This is not a podcast about Lirio per se or any type of investment. And then the other thing is more recently, and maybe you've been doing this longer than I know, you are now an author. And so I'm in the process of reading your book, and I'm sure that will come up as well. So anyways, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
All right. So let's start off for our listeners. Give us a little context of who is Mike West? And you can't just say, read my book. You know, where did you grow up? Where'd you go to school? And then just a high level of your career.
Well, so I grew up in East Tennessee and went to the University of Tennessee. Immediately after college, I got a normal job working for a large company and was on that trajectory of just sort of doing what most people do. And I was bored and I felt uninspired and began what has become, I think, really just a year over year of entrepreneurship. Done a lot of things. Some of them have been successful. Some of them haven't. Any good entrepreneur, any honest entrepreneur will tell you that they have many things they tried that didn't work out so well. I've never really had a primary focus. I've always been more of a generalist. So it's not like I could say I'm a technology person or this or that. I've done a lot of different things. And so I think my focus has always been on growing businesses, building teams, understanding, you know, products and understanding sort of market conditions. But I've never been a technical expert at any of the things. And there's no question that I would not be considered technically expert at Lirio, given that it's an AI company. I'm not really sure that I fit the bill on expertise around artificial intelligence.
Some of the companies that you've either started or been involved with, just, you know, generically, what kind of field have they been in?
Yeah, so I was involved in healthcare when managed care was first getting started. So it's hard to believe now, but back in the early 90s, this notion of managed care was a new thing. And I was involved in several managed care organizations, building PPO networks and things of that nature. In 1998, I got this wild, crazy idea that the internet was going to be something special. And so I started an internet company called HomePoint. We raised $73 million in 9 months. We were like all the other companies, you know, every vertical. Had a couple of companies that were funded. We were in the furniture space. We were Wayfair before Wayfair was Wayfair. And, you know, we did some really interesting things, but we were ahead of our time. I ran a stint where I oversaw sort of an advisory firm, mutual fund business. And so you can see there's not a lot of common thread between all these things. And out of the mutual fund business became Lirio. It was born out of work and thoughts we had around communicating to fiduciary advisors and brokers. And that's where it came from. Now its focus is exclusively on healthcare, but that was sort of the evolution of my career from one thing to the next.
So one thing I learned last night from reading, I think it's chapter 3 of your book, is that you were a walk-on in football. So did you ever get on the field and play?
I did. But here's the thing. I was a long snapper. If anyone ever saw or remembers me, that's not a good thing. That's the one position where you never want to be known. And so, you know, you could go out there, you could do your thing, you could, you know, run back off the field. And if no one noticed you, it was a good 20 seconds.
Okay. So we totally digress, but that's the beautiful thing about this. We can. How the heck do you become a long snap?
Well, it's a really good question. When I was in high school, I was actually tight end. I was a decent tight end. And we didn't have been on the team that could snap. And so the coach lined up like 20 people. And I was just dumb in that I actually tried to do it well. Maybe other people were trying to do it poorly. And I did okay. And so then I became a long snapper. And so like everything else that people try to do. I tried to be good at it, right? If I was going to do it. And so I did a lot of stuff and worked on it. It's a skill. It's a very rote thing, right? Once you do it 1,000 times, then you can do it. I mean, there's rarely do you see in this day and age a long snapper have a mistake at any
Right.
college or professional level, because it's just automated. I mean, it just is what it is. And so you just get to the point where you just do it so much that now I will tell you, it's nerve-wracking. It changed my life. I always used to say, if you could look between your legs at, 90,000 people behind you and not mess up, you can handle a lot of things. So it definitely changed the trajectory of what maybe was possible for me. It also gave me the sense, as just kind of a normal guy from East Tennessee, that I could do some interesting things and maybe have some impact in the future. So, I don't know if I would have if that had not happened.
So again, I'm going to keep going further here, only because it's, I've obviously I'm familiar with long snappers, and but it you watch a football game, that's not even in your, oh, I wonder how the snapper's going to do today, So you don't watch the ball, do you? All the way back into the hands? So it's a blind hike.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and it's different than it used to be, Jeff. So back when I played, so now I get to say back in the old days, but back when I played, they were allowed to hit the long snapper. You can't hit them now. Okay. And so if you, and it hasn't changed to what the long snapper does, but back when I was playing, if you kept your head between your legs looking at the ball, you were going to get annihilated. And so you snapped and popped up as fast as you could out of defense to try to save your neck from some disaster. And now they don't do it for that reason, but they still do it. I mean, you could get to the place where you could close your eyes and snap and never even, I mean, it is literally just an automated process.
Okay, switch into the here and now. So tell us a little bit about, what are you doing right now? What are you working on these days in your life?
I stay busy with two things. One is obviously Lirio. Lirio is a company that is way more complex than anything I've ever been involved in. There isn't really a roadmap. There's a lot of really interesting business things to consider, strategies, but there's a lot of interesting ethical and moral considerations for an artificial intelligence company. And so you can't really sleep on this business and just not pay attention. So I'm very involved in the dynamic nature of that. In my spare time and in my transition, because I am chairman, I like to say when you're chairman of a company, that's like being the uncle at Thanksgiving. You get to say the blessing, and then they put you in the teenager table. That's what happens at company meetings. I get to say the blessing, and then I get pushed aside. But in my transition, I'm doing a lot of writing, and my writing is not inconsistent with how I've lived my life. So both of these, as a combination of my professional career and the beginning of my other career, are consistent with how I've always viewed things, and so that makes it easy for me.
How would you best describe who you are in the context of where you are at in your life journey?
I would say that I am very much at peace. I am very comfortable being vulnerable. I'm very comfortable not knowing and seeking answers. I am at the best place I've ever been because I've been able to step away from things and reflect on it. And you can't do that when you're in the middle of the vortex. Sometimes it's really difficult. So I would say that I feel more like the guy who's sort of been through a lot, got the scars, but has a different, clearer view of things than maybe I would have when I was getting the scars. I feel like that is sort of who I am. I don't feel done. I don't feel finished. I don't feel like, I've got nothing to give. I just, I think we're in a chaotic time, and there's a lot of misinformation and a lot of things that go on. And I feel like being able to share some of my experience, my critical thinking, and sort of a different way of looking things is useful. And I just feel like that's kind of what I can do.
So this next question, how, in a big way or a small way, however you want to think about it, are you trying to change the world?
Well, I don't know if it's bigger, but what I'm trying to do is, in every possible interaction I can have, whether it's one-on-one and or it's through my writing, is to encourage people to think, to encourage people to use the brains and the God-given opportunities that we have to consider context and life and differently. So I find myself at the company asking big questions, questions that are intended for us to think, not just do. In my writings, I'm definitely willing to be vulnerable and to acknowledge, the frailties and insecurities that all of us have that no one really wants to admit, in the context that maybe then other people will do the same thing. The amount of misinformation that we receive as a society from technology is so enormously overwhelming that the only way we're going to maintain our ability to be the humans that we are is through rational thinking and critical thinking and also honesty. I just try to live my life that way. I can say this, I haven't always, Jeff. This is not like this is, I don't think I could do this if I had done this my whole life. I think it would be more fake. This is comes from a place of a lot of pain, right? I remember people ask me all the time. I taught 9 semesters at the university, and the most common question I got was, what's the secret? What's the secret to success? And the short answer for me was that you have to accept the fact that you're not always going to have success, right? If you think about it in sports, if you hit 300 in the major leagues, you're an all-star. That means you failed 7 times out of 10, right? I mean, as a society, I think we just have to continue to let people know it's okay. Successful people or people who are perceived to be successful, it's okay for them to let people know that they're insecure and they're vulnerable and that it was hard. It wasn't easy. It didn't just come naturally, just didn't wake up on third base. It was tough. And so that's the way I know to do it. I don't, small-minded, but it's in that it's one-on-one sometimes, but it's also not so small. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to have a pretty far reach, and I think, it resonates with people.
So let me ask you one specific question about Lirio. Well, as chairman of the board, how would you say Lirio is trying to change the world?
So if you, in the simplest terms, if you look at artificial intelligence, the overwhelming majority of algorithms are momentum, sort of predictive analytic, predictive models like generative AI and things of that nature. And they're trying to get people to do something that enables them to make more money. Doesn't necessarily mean it's in the best interest of the person. It just is it's just a continuation of their momentum. The most challenging thing for AI is to have it focused on something that delivers value for the individual that's receiving it. Now that can be left open for interpretation, right? We are hired by some people to encourage vaccines. There are people who don't believe in vaccines, but we're not into politics. We're into the clinical, what's in the best interest of patients. And so what we're trying to do, well, let me say it differently. What we're able to do is to engage our customers' patients and to change their behavior. Now, the significance of that is good versus evil is, what are you changing it to do? If you're trying to change behavior to do something just for the pursuit of dollar, and we're not a charitable organization. We're a for-profit organization. But if that's your goal, that's different than, if I drive better health outcomes for patients, I'll make money, but those patients will have a better quality of life. They will do better. And one last thing that Lirio is particularly focused on, not because we set out to, but because it's just a natural fit. In this country, the most challenged healthcare segment is the underserved population. It's a real struggle. When COVID hit, you saw that population was hit the hardest because they're, generally speaking, it's a generalization, not as healthy. And they're not as healthy because they're underserved. So they're hard to reach. They're hard to communicate with. They're hard to change behavior. Lirio is very well suited and has seen very impressive outcomes at getting underserved populations to take better care of themselves. So if we can do that, if we can engage people and change their behavior for the good, then we are making a difference. And, healthcare is the single biggest cost in this country in terms of just what eats up so much of the dollar. We're not a particularly healthy country, even though we're not. So there's a lot of work to be done there.
We're going to switch here. Well, not switch, but we're talking to our listeners generally are financial advisors. It could be their clients. And so, you know, one of the things we talk about impact investing, which is one of the reasons why I personally invested in Lirio when I did, just because of the potential financial return that was, that I believe was there. But equally important was the mission that you guys are on. So with that, you've seen capital, you've been around capital, whether it's money, whether it's intellectual, whatever. So my question for you is, when did you realize the power of capital in your life? And what does that mean to you?
Well, I think I realized the power of capital very early, because as an entrepreneur, it is your lifeblood, right? You know, all things come from that. My view of the power of capital has changed. I think that, you know, as you look at the marketplace, we've got enormous amounts of VC and private equity, and you have to wonder what, you know, I always sort of put it through the sieve, is what are they trying to solve for? What's their goal, right? And I wouldn't judge their mandate, but their goal is very clear. It's just to make money, and they're looking for the best opportunity. And that might be an overstatement, but it's not too far away from reality. I think capital can be used for other things, and I don't think it's just money. I think capital in terms of influence and how people conduct themselves and how companies run themselves and how they set their mission and adhere to that really is a powerful thing. And as you get older, as I've gotten older, I've valued that as much as money. Money is fungible. It's everywhere. You know, it is everywhere. It is how it is used and what it's trying to solve for, I think, is far more interesting than what the return is. Now, I'm not against return. Okay. I don't want to say that. I don't think, you know, I don't view the world that way, but I think you can have both, right? I think you can have both. And as a country, you didn't ask this, but we're at a critical moment with the development of artificial intelligence the way it is. AI in and of itself is not capable of destruction. And what I mean by that is the agent will do what you ask it to do. It will not suddenly wake up and say, I'm bored with this. Let's go kill some people in Chicago. It's not going to do that. That's not what AI does. But I just made it a human thing. It will do what you ask it to do. But humans are fallible people. And humans can ask it to do lots of things that are not in the best interest of other humans. And so we are at a really important moment in time where we should be asking ourselves, is our capital going to support things that might, in the long term, be substantially detrimental? So just chasing the return, or are we going to invest in things that still are powerful and still have potential for harm, but are directed and mission driven towards something that's not? Like, we could use our agent to do anything to influence behavior. We choose to be in healthcare because it's the only industry we can really say that the patient is the one at risk and gets the benefit. If we get people to buy tennis shoes, you know, what's special about that?
So I think you maybe have already touched on this next concept that I want to ask you about. And I'm gonna encourage you on this one to think about this from both a chairman of Lirio, but then also personally. And you can answer personally however you want. I'll throw out, I do think your book, maybe if you think in the context of your book. And the idea that I wanted to ask is, or discuss here briefly, is what does stewardship mean to you?
You know, it's an interesting question. I've been a part of different sorts of organizations that talk about, you know, servant leadership and things of that nature. And to me, I think at the end of the day, I think it means to the best of your ability in everything that you impact, doing it for something that is something that you would be proud of, that, you know, and everybody's got a different barometer of that, Jeff. I mean, you know, there's no question about that. I can't speak to what other people believe or want to believe. I can't. And frankly, not going to change their view on things. But at the end of the day, you know, you referenced the book, when you're at the end of your life, right, and you're thinking about, did you give as much as you could of what you had for the betterment of the world you live in, it's typically not a question of the measurements that you see oftentimes for people who are just measuring themselves by money. I'm not against money at all, but I think at the end of the day, we come across a lot of people in our daily lives, and people are generally unhappy. right? There's a lot of unhappy people right now. And, you know, how do we impact that? Well, we do the best we can to communicate honesty and transparency. The best thing I've done as chairman at Lirio was be honest with the people that work there, right? See, the funny thing about it being in leadership that I learned really early is that it, you know, people say it's lonely. It's lonely typically because everyone thinks you have the answers, and you know that everyone thinks you have the answers, and you know you don't have all the answers. And so you build up this wall to protect yourself because you're afraid you can't live up to the brilliant expectations that people have of you. So when you're called upon to speak, you're supposed to be so eloquent and so inspiring that they're going to run through a brick wall for you or do something great. And that's not real. That's not life. There are times you just don't. You know, I remember the first time I came into the office when I was really young and I was the CEO of the company, and I walked in and I was in the worst mood possible. And everyone thought that the company was in danger. And I was really upset because Tennessee had lost in the fourth quarter, a game they shouldn't lose. That's what I was upset about. It had nothing to do with the company. But it took me, you know, a day and a half to realize that the way I was acting. So I think the best thing I've done at Lirio is just be honest. It's just come on and say, I don't know what the answer is. I remember when COVID hit, I said, look, I have no idea, none, what this is going to do. None. But there's going to be two kinds of people in this, two kinds of companies. There's going to be kinds that just barely survive, and then there's going to be kinds that find a way to thrive. And I don't know how we're going to do that, but we're going to do it together, and we're going to do it in a transparent way. And to me, what the reason I answer your question this way is now, you know, we're 4 years into this, and I still have people walk up to me and talk to me differently than they would if I had been the normal CEO kind of person at that moment in time, because I showed them, I gave them permission to think about things differently. So that's the way I think you can be a good steward. Just be responsible for yourself and consistent, and also a little humble.
Well, I'm not done with your book yet, but I definitely see that coming through, the vulnerability and honesty. You know, on one hand, and I told you this earlier, your mom's situation, your family is a typical family, but you open windows that not everybody wants to talk about. And so I can see that honesty and transparency coming through.
Like, one of the things I always like to say is, you know, you've worked at companies where the company says, oh, we're all just one big happy family. My response to that is, no, we're not. Family's different. We're not family. We work together. We're not family. However, we are human beings trying to get the same thing accomplished. And that's a different level of respect than just knowing somebody. So you just know somebody, you have a common goal when you're working towards that, and family's different. We're not family. You know, that, and so if at the end of the day, people can reference me or think of me and say, geez, he gave me permission to sort of be okay with me and to then go do something special, I think that's really cool, right? That's really cool. I don't care what that is, but just the permission to do something that you think matters is enough.
It's interesting we have this discussion, because when you and I met, would have been the last, I don't know, I don't even exactly remember, but the last year, let's just say last year, 2 years at my prior career. And I had just come off of a significant back surgery, and as well as other things. And I remember what it forced me to do was to be honest with, you know, I think I had 130 people on the team. And I watched just with the vulnerability and the honesty. I mean, it was like, people were just opening up in a way that they hadn't before. And it was through vulnerability, in this case, physical. But the other thing that really hit me was not only physical, and this is a sad to admit, but through that process, what hit me was, oh, stress, emotions, like it actually is real. It actually matters. I have limits. And so being able to articulate that to my colleagues and associates, it just changed the dynamic.
And that's okay, right? I mean, it's okay to do that. It gives you the ability to go through the hard times, because someone said to me the other day, they said, you know, I'm starting to realize that I used to think life was all great and nothing ever bad happens. And now I'm starting to think that life's great and occasionally bad things happen. And I said, yeah, and you might want to take it to the next level and realize that for a lot of people, bad things happen and occasionally life is great. And the line between those is not nearly as wide as people think it is. We only have our health. When you don't have your health, it doesn't take you very long to realize that things are getting real really fast. And so I'm super excited about my writing because it gives me peace. You know, I think that people, well, I think people like vulnerability, and it's not fake vulnerability. I mean, I feel just as insecure as I say I am.
Right.
And I think that's okay. You know, I think it's helped Lirio because, you know, in the early days of Lirio, we were talking about artificial intelligence in ways that no one even remotely understood or cared about. And it takes a strong focus on a mission and a purpose to talk about something that people dismiss so quickly as they did in the early days. And they really did dismiss it.
Well, look, I mean, I jumped from traditional finance to impact investing 9 years ago. And I can't tell you how many times it was weird because on one hand, it's like, man, this is amazing. I can see it. And then you get out there and talk about it, you're like, wait, am I nuts? Is this thing not real? And so I get it.
It's hard.
It's
hard. I mean, but I suspect you're happier today and more peace with yourself because you're living yourself on your terms and you're making the impact that you think you can and want to make. And really, Jeff, that's really all you can do, right? I mean, you know, that's why the question of what's the secret, or sort of your question, you know, how are you making a big impact? That's too much, right? The simple answer is you make an impact. And if you do enough impact and you do enough and you do enough and it starts to add up, like I'll give you an interesting story. I taught 9 semesters this class at UT. I really loved it, but wasn't my calling, but I loved it. What's really cool though is all these years later is these students will call me or reach out to me, and they're not telling me how they're doing all these great things in their career. They're telling me how happy they are with their career. And there's a difference. And I think that, you know, I think just the fact they reach out to me tells me something good happened in the classroom.
Yeah. Okay, in closing, this is another big, big question. And so again, I'm gonna take your family unit out of this question because that's generally what most people are going to want to answer. But if you could have a dream come true in your life, what would it be?
Yeah, it's a pretty, I wouldn't have answered this way until recently. It would be to have a significant platform of people that valued what I wrote and spend the next 20 years of my life writing. I think I could write 15 books in the next 20 years. I think that maybe the secret to success is reading, right? I was not all that overly educated. I was a walk-on football player at Tennessee. That's not exactly the Harvard of the South, although it's not too bad. Everything that I've learned at some level comes from the reading that I've done, and I've done a lot of reading. And so if I could be remembered and impact people as someone who's writing cause someone to think or wonder, or then that would be perfect. That would just be an absolutely perfect way to spend my life. And I get asked all the time, do I wish I'd been a writer my whole life? And the fast answer is you want to say yes, but the honest answer is I wouldn't be the writer that I am if I hadn't had all this history. And you know, there's nothing worse than a 20 something year old that has it all figured out. Right. I mean, you got to get to your 50s when you realize you didn't have anything figured out. And now you still don't have it figured out, but you're okay with not having it figured out. And that's kind of where I'm at. And I just would love to spend the next 20 years doing that.
Well, I've definitely appreciated our relationship over the last 10 years, let's just say. And just so people know, you know, when I originally made the investment back in Lirio, I can honestly say you were a guy that I love to learn. And it's not because I'm brilliant. I just love to learn. And so you allowed me to come on this journey with you behind the scenes of like, explain to me, I mean, this is whatever, 6 years ago, like 7 years ago, explain to me what this stuff really is. But even, you know, and it's funny because I hadn't really thought about this, but even really how we came together, we met before that, but then it was an investment. And through that investment, we've actually become friends. And it's not your typical model. I think people think about it, but it really has been a blessing way beyond even the investment that I made. And you've been kind enough to answer my questions and you know, I'll send you emails. Hey, what do you think about this article and whatnot? So I definitely appreciate the friendship, appreciate your willingness to let the small little investor ask you questions that you're like, what do you mean? You're not a big investor. Knock it off.
Please. I think our friendship's fabulous. I love it. I love being able to talk to you and hear your thoughts and learn from you. It's just fun, right? This is what it should all be about, is building relationships so that you're not so lonely. So you're not so alone. So you, like, I feel like I could pick up the phone and call you and say, hey, look, I'm really thinking about something. Yeah, it had nothing to do with Larry. Hey, I got something that's really gnawing at me. And even talking about the book, because the book's a hard book, you know, to share with you how that played itself out. That's the kind of valuable friendship and relationship that there's not enough of, right? There's too much tribalism, and you know, we can figure out how to fight if we want to, or we can figure out how to get along and learn and exist in a beautiful place.
So we will put your book in our description, but so just the title of your book, and then and you have a blog. If you want to just state that for us, that'd be great.
So the book is called Mom's Diary, A Story of Loss, Reflection, and Hope. It's about, as it says, my mom's diary. She began writing a diary when she got cancer, and she wrote that diary through her cancer experience. And then it was given to me, and 20 years later, I decided to read it and write about it as I read it. And so it's her journey, my journey. And then, you know, it's a very, very complex, enjoyable to read, even though it is a very tough thing. I think it can be that. The blog, you can find the blog on my website at michaelwest-writes.com. The title of the blog is I Was Just Thinking, and I release something every Tuesday and Friday, and it literally is whatever random thoughts I'm thinking about that just feel peculiar or interesting, or I just think, you know, ought to be talked about. And so I wrote about Occam's razor yesterday, which is this notion of keeping things simple. And I tied it to the IRS because we know the IRS is not simple. There's nothing simple about doing your taxes. And so I'd love if people want to come on the website and subscribe. It doesn't cost anything. It's just a chance to spend 5 minutes thinking about stuff.
I have to comment, because you talk about the IRS. I had a situation on the business side where we paid everything on time, but a form got filled out incorrectly. I got notification probably a week ago, or maybe even less than that it's finally resolved. But it took us 4 years. And I can't tell you how many letters, because every time they would make an adjustment, it sends all these letters, and you're like, I don't know what you're talking about. So, yes.
I mean, it's the most unbelievably ridiculous system that you could possibly. We could argue all day long about how much we should pay in taxes, and we can argue about all that stuff and how the money, people can argue about that. But I don't know anybody that can argue that this methodology makes sense. It just is nuts.
Well, if I were to go back, and I'm not going to, because I don't want to know, if I were to add up how many hours we worked on this, I mean, it's probably at least 100 hours. I mean, it's crazy how much, but anyways, it's resolved. So, well, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it. Fun to learn from you. Don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. Please rate us and review us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and hopefully that will inspire others to live out their dreams and passions, not only physically, but also with their capital. So until next time, I'm Jeff Schaefer. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.